Welcome to the Brown County Hour.
Coming to you from the legendary hills of Brown.
Where the plum purple haze,
the one nature herself drapes over the hills and hollers,
inspires local characters, artists, and nature lovers.
It's as though the hills themselves conspire to create a beauty and a culture in the heart of Indiana.
Sit for a spell and hear the music.
The tall tales.
True stories.
And current goings on.
Brought to you by folks who still know how to sit by a fire in winter.
And swim buck naked in summer.
Welcome to episode 46 of the Brown County Hour. This is Carrie Ray.
And this is Dave Seastrom, along with the rest of the crew, and we would like to wish each and every one of you a Happy New Year. This is the first show of 2016, and we're delighted to share it with you. So, where do we begin, Carrie?
Well, our musical guests this month are Chuck Wills and Braden Brown. We'll begin with a conversation, and then we'll hear some of their music. Vera Grubbs brings us an interview with local artist John Elmore. Jeff Tryon shares another My Brown County, and Pam Rader has a conversation with some of the good people from Triad.
Carrie Ray shares another for a song, Rick Fettig has a notion, and I will be interviewing local elder Samuel Fritch. In this month's essay, I will discuss Sam and how important it is to record the words of our elders.
In our first segment, we'll begin with an interview with musicians Chuck Wills and Braden Brown, followed by some of their music. We'll also hear the latest edition of For a Song from Carrie Ray, and Vera Grubbs brings us an interview with local artist John Elmore.
He's got those brand new strings that they're like,
right?
Mine are so cold.
It's a Weber.
That too?
Here, I'll turn the volume down a little.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Okay, here we go.
Chuck Wills and Braden Brown with us this evening, and you guys are a duo that have been playing around. So why don't you talk a little bit about how you got together and what you're doing?
Well, we've been playing as a duo for, almost a year?
Yeah.
We met actually at church, 5 years ago?
Five or six, yeah. It's been a while back.
Yeah, and we played together on the church worship team. And then we'd play out some with Rick Clayton and as part of the Barnstormers band. Like I said, it's just been the past year that we have gone out as a duo.
What are your musical influences? Are you doing mostly covers? Are you writing some stuff? Or?
Well, it's mostly covers. I've been doing some writing and working some of those originals into the set list. But it's a lot of covers.
Mostly covers, yeah. But I think writing our own stuff is kind of something that's like the next chapter, next step, and what we want to do. I know Chuck's brought a lot to me, and we played a few of them, and I guess I'm just kind of falling behind a little bit on that.
Yeah,
but it's hard to get it out, because I get it and I'm like, yeah, scratch it, throw it away, and so I guess I just don't trust myself enough.
Well, it all begins at the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't wait until you're 40,
right?
Like I did. Go ahead and get it out. But I think Braden and I probably have a lot of the same influences. Our pool of tunes seems to, for both of us, go back to 60s and 70s classic rock. And then, more modern things as well. I'm a huge fan of Jason Isbell, Ryan Adams. Braden goes off in kind of a different direction for me on some of the more recent stuff.
Slightly. I do like a lot. I love Dave Matthews. Really enjoy Dave Matthews a lot. And John Mayer, though, I get a lot of grief from that because of just who he represents a lot. But I think he's a fabulous musician. But a lot of the 60s, 70s older tunes is kind of what I grew up on. the music I really like.
That must have been a parental influence.
A little bit, yeah. Dad used to listen to a lot of Bob Seger, and Mom loved the blues and still does, and she's played a lot, just like B.B. King and Buddy Guy. And
sounds like good musical choices
to
me.
Yeah, they steered me the right way.
Well, it's an advantage to be raised right. Do you have long-term goals? Are you going to cut a CD?
Well, I've been threatening to have a CD of my originals for the past 3 years. Mm-hmm. So my prediction is that it will happen. Let's not hold our breaths, but okay. it will happen. You know, I'm sure we'll find Braden playing on it as well as some of the other usual suspects around the county.
Well, you guys do kind of intermingle. I've noticed this about the local musicians. You often are performing with one another. In fact, Chuck, you were in here just this last month, although primarily as an instrumentalist that evening.
Yeah, that's true, playing with Carrie Ray and Kara Barnard for the Brown County Christmas Sing-Along.
Really look forward to Thursday evenings at the Pine Room. What can I say?
Yeah, first Thursday acoustic duo, although we have dragged some other guys in with us. Occasionally, you'll find us performing as Max 5 Watt, which is more of a rock and roll band with a rhythm section.
Okay.
And Braden has been sitting in with Max 5, doing a lot of lead guitar work and a lot of tasty licks.
Is that a David Shank collaboration?
That is a David Shank collaboration,
yes.
Exactly, Brian.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Dave's a good guy.
A good guy, well-known locally as having spent most of his life teaching music in the school system here, and also being an outstanding musician in his own right.
Absolutely. Well, he and I are both brass players, so okay. We kind of have that brass player thing. I'm the old guy of the group. I'm, well, let's say mid-40s.
That'll do.
Yeah, Braden, you're the young buck.
I'm the young buck, yeah.
Yeah, are you willing to say your age?
I'm 22, though I don't look it, but I am 22.
Well, Braden, let me just say this about that.
Okay.
take a life lesson from me. I waited until I was 40 years old to sing a note in public. And I am very proud of you that you have found your vocal chops and have incorporated that into your musical palette. So, good job.
Well, thank you.
Do it more. And so, you and I met when you were like 14?
Yeah, I was 15. I think when I did Barnstormers with everyone.
Yeah, you didn't have a driver's license. Your mom drove you around everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Full luggage and all.
Yeah, glad those days are over.
Oh, yeah.
Although, I have to tell you, we show up to gigs, and his mom and dad still carry his gear in for him.
Is that right?
His mom and dad come to every single gig. It could be anywhere. It could be Bloomington. It could be Indianapolis, wherever. And his mom and dad show up, which is phenomenal. It's fantastic. And they carry his stuff in for him.
They're loyal fans.
Yeah, I can't get my wife to carry any of my stuff. And the other advice, I mean, since I'm in sort of the old guy role here, always be one guitar away from a divorce. I realize that's very premature for you at this point. So see if you can set that up.
That's some of the greatest advice I've ever heard.
I know. You've got some great guitars.
I do, yeah. But not enough.
There's never enough. So what is your process? How do you decide who does what within the music itself?
I think we're fairly unorthodox with it. We kind of just, we have our list of songs, and we're like, that sounds like a good song to play. And then we kind of...
Yeah, honestly, it just comes together very naturally.
Yeah.
You know, if it's a song that maybe I bring to the table, and I'm going to be playing a lot of rhythm and focusing on vocals, then Braden is really going to be the lead guitar guy, and vice versa. Yeah. If it's a song that Braden's really holding down the fort as far as rhythm and vocals, then I'm going to do the lead work, and it just sort of happens. We just trade off.
It sounds like a good partnership to me.
Yeah, it's really been effortless, maybe because we've put almost zero thought into it. But it's been quite effortless. We just have fun. We do it because it's fun and good things happen.
Absolutely.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. She's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away, wonder spent this time where she's gone. Wonder if she's going to stay. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. She's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away. I know. Gotta leave that young thing alone. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. Only darkness every day. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. She's always gone. Anytime she goes away. Anytime she goes away. Anytime she goes away.
Carrie Ray, welcome to For a Song. And here we are at the start of another year in the life. And as I thought about what I wanted to cover in this edition, I considered topics in kind. Beginnings, retrospectives, resolutions, and the like. But to tell you true, I've never really been much of a New Year's resolver. Not that I don't believe in the value of setting goals and vigorously chasing them. I think it's more of the calendaring component that doesn't really resonate with me. No big surprise there. My relationship with time has always been a little more fluid, naturally and lately with more impetus. So likewise, my resolutions come whenever I notice value in making them. As I think I've mentioned before, one of them is to spend more time with the music of other artists, and when possible, the artists themselves. To that end, I've signed on recently to some songwriter rounds. A round is a show where a few songwriters, usually 2 to 4, sit together on stage with an instrument, often a guitar, and take turns playing their original songs. I love doing these and hearing other folks' tunes. But my favorite part is hanging out before and after talking shop. A frequent topic of conversation is about process. And while there are certainly similar threads that run through those conversations, I'm always amazed by the broad spectrum of approach, priority, and focus across the songwriting community. I found some of that to be dependent on genre or style. For example, the approach to write a hit bluegrass song might be very different than that to write a hit R&B song. With singer-songwriters, it can also depend greatly on that person's core competency. For example, while also an instrumentalist, I am first and foremost a singer and storyteller. As a result, historically, my process has had a strong focus on lyrical hook and melody. The rhythm, often a derivative of the lyrical phrasing, and harmonic content are then slid in underneath these elements. By contrast, I have a good friend whose core competency is as a guitar player. So his primary initial focus when writing a song is on the guitar. Melodic hooks, rhythm, riffs, and licks. The melody, often born of the guitar part, and lyrics follow and are laid on top of that foundation. There's no right or wrong thing to focus on, and ultimately, strength in all of these elements is required to result in a great song. But once you learn to listen critically, you'll find that the net result is heavily influenced by the initial focus. And while there are anomalies, I often find that songwriters don't deviate much from their formula. In fact, I realized a couple of years ago that I really hadn't. and I wondered what might happen if I shook things up a bit. So I resolved to find out, just randomly, not because it was January 1. I began making changes, from something as small and simple as going to a different and specific location to write, to starting with an entirely different focus for me, like rhythm, or beginning to study different techniques of playing guitar, like fingerstyle, to add something fresh. From time to time, in future installments of For a Song, I will share some of my favorite deviations with you. For now, whether you're into songwriting, prose, poetry, choreography, fine art, or any other creative pursuit, try a little deviation, a change of venue, a reordering of your process, a change of primary focus. Even if, in the end, you come full circle to your trodden trail, my fellow Brown Countyans, you know as well as I that getting lost in the woods for a spell can be just the restorative thing the doctor wasn't wise enough to order. I'm Carrie Ray, wishing you Godspeed, and hoping you'll join me next time on For a Song. If you have ideas, questions, or topics you would like to have covered on For a Song, please send them along. You can reach me via the contact page of my website, carrieray.com. That's CARRIRAY.com. Thanks for listening.
This is Vera Grubbs with the Brown County Hour. I'm here with John Elmore. We're just south of Narbonne. Mr. Elmore's studio is south of 46, off the old 46. And you're part of the Back Road studio tour, I understand.
Yes, I am, for the first time this year.
Oh, wait, this is your first time?
Yeah, my first time.
And how are you finding it to be for you?
It's okay. Yeah, I'll do it again.
I remember you well from the time Jack Weddle was friends with us.
Well, they introduced me and my wife. In 1975, I came over. I didn't know anybody, and he was selling real estate and teaching school, and that's when I met him. And I'm from Bloomington, but I went to the Air Force out of high school, and I was gone for about 30 years in the Southwest, in Old Mexico, Southern California, the Baja. I've been everywhere. Had a silver and lead mine in Old Mexico. I'm a retired railroad conductor. So we came back here, and I started my paint contracting business. And then on the side, I started doing my art again. I started with cartoons when I was a kid. My art teacher, Mrs. Robb, was my inspiration, and then I signed a contract with Walt Disney. I lived in El Paso and commuted to Burbank, California. That's where it all started, in Bloomington, Indiana, in my basement. We had a sign shop. I was a sign painter for my dad, but then I started doing cartoons. Then from there I started doing birds and Indians and, you know, you name it.
So you talk about not having any real formal training for
painting. I never had, no training at all.
Self-taught.
Yeah, self-taught. But it runs on my mother's side of the family. There's a few cousins that taught art down by Southern Indiana. But after they got out of college, well, they started teaching art too. It runs on my mother's side of the family. But I've never had a lesson.
Do you give lessons?
I do in the wintertime when I'm here, because we're getting ready to leave. We'll be gone for several months. We follow the sun. We usually go to the Southwest.
Why is it that you concentrate on the Native American?
Because I'm Potawatomi, Wea, and Miami. This was a village at one time, the Wyandotte Village. You're sitting on it right now.
Is that right?
Yeah, this whole valley.
And your medium is pen and ink and pencil.
Yeah, I use a pencil from Italy. It's a graphite. That's what I use. Well, I do oils, everything. But I mean, this is what I use on my end is. Bill Zimmerman, when he seen it, he said, "You ought to just keep on doing that." He says, "Very few people can do that." He said, "I can't even do that." And I do birds too. I was going to publish a bird book, but I got sidetracked. Sometimes you just shelve something. But I've been doing Indians since 1978, and I've sold through the country, several states and several foreign countries.
So you were actually native to South Central Indiana then?
Yeah, I was born in Hazleton, Indiana, down by Decker, Evansville, Princeton, on White River.
Besides the Backroads Tour, do you belong to any other organized arts groups?
No, they want me to. I got a paint contracting business, and that keeps me pretty well busy. You got to move. If you don't, you You know, it got to get away from you.
That's right.
Exercise, walking.
Use it or lose it.
That's it.
So have you studied any of the historical artists that went to the West?
Oh, sure. Remington, Russell.
Henry Cross?
Yep. I go to a lot of galleries when I travel. I enjoy going to galleries. There's a lot of good artists out there.
This has been Vera Grubbs talking to John Elmore for the Brown County Hour. Now we pause for station identification.
Support for WFHB and the Brown County Hour is brought to you by Plum Creek Antiques, located at the intersection of 135 and 45 in downtown Bean Blossom, where visitors can buy, sell, or trade most anything. More information is available by calling 812-988-6268. You are listening to the Brown County Hour on volunteer-powered community radio WFHB at 100.7 in Brown County, 91.3 and 98.1 in Bloomington, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at wfhb.org.
We begin this segment with Rick Fedick's Notions. Jeff Tryon shares the latest edition of My Brown County, and Pam Rader interviews some of the Triad volunteers. We also hear another song from Chuck and Braden.
Rick, you have something for us. Is it the State of the Union?
No, Notion.
State of the Nation?
No, State of the Notion. Every once in a while, I have a notion, a concept or an opinion of a belief or idea, and I thought I'd share it with you and our audience.
Okay.
What if Dr. Phil occasionally found a situation where people were doing something right and behaving correctly? And then, what if he used that as a teaching point from that positive situation? What if there were less violence and drama on TV? Everyone's worried about copycat killings and crimes. What if we didn't show the cat's activity repeatedly and repeatedly on the news? What if people earned a living wage? And it could be different in New York than rural Oklahoma, but might not people be more content and spend that money comfortably as opposed to beating the deadline so their water and electricity doesn't get shut off? We did just have a climate conference attended by over 150 country representatives. Successful or not, it appears that we can all communicate and work together as one world. I do believe there's an ongoing effort to clean up Salt Creek. There are efforts to save our forest. What if we, the government, spent our money on supporting our teachers, librarians, and first responders? What if we reworked our infrastructure to make it the best in the world? Then there's renewable energy and feeding and helping the less fortunate and less capable. What if the water and air was pure again? There will always be challenges, or more optimistically, opportunities. Perhaps we could keep on fighting and bickering with other groups of people around the world and trashing the earth. But what if it was a wonderful world? If the mind can conceive it and the heart can believe it, we just might or could achieve it. There's always hope. Thanks for listening. We love you and have a happy new year.
This is My Brown County with Jeff Tryon. The more I thought about what really makes Brown County, the more I began to realize how we each have our own particular Brown County. In a way, Brown County is what we each bring to it, what we find there for our own, what we each make of it. No one else sees it probably in the same exact way that I do. That's what makes it my Brown County. A new year. January gets its name from the Roman god Janus, who is always pictured as two-faced, one face looking forward, the other backward. New Year's provides us a valuable time to both ponder the past and anticipate the future. Where have we been? Where are we going? How do we get there? What's in the immediate prospect ahead for us?
It's that time of year when we usually make New Year's resolutions, and whether we end up keeping them or not, it's probably good for us to have a regularly scheduled time where we intentionally stop and consider where we are at, where we have been over the past year, where we would like to go in the coming year. And it is good for us to intentionally set goals to help make us into better people, whatever that is to us personally, whether it's to be thinner, better organized, more financially successful. We just take this arbitrary point on the artificial calendar and we say to ourselves, from here on, I'm making a new beginning. From now on, I will eat healthier, I will get enough sleep, I will get some aerobic exercise, I will do my best work. Well, you get the general idea. How do we change? How do we make changes in our lives? Oh, change happens all the time. It is entirely unavoidable. But I'm talking about changes we intentionally make, changes for the better. How do we get better? How do we improve ourselves as citizens, as family members, as human beings? There are three things involved in our reflections upon standing on this artificial edge of time, this imagined barrier between the old year and the new year. There's a looking backward of assessing where we have been and what that means to us here and now. And there's a looking ahead with hope toward a vision of where we'd eventually want to be. And then there is a kind of intermediate planning, goal setting. And this is where lists of resolutions come in. Resolutions are the concrete, immediate planning for doing the work to get us to where we want to be. Part of it is visionary. This is where we should be. This is what we should be. Part of it is practical. Here are the small, doable steps by which we shall eventually be able to get our goal. These things are self-actuated, inner-directed. We first put on the new self mentally, then physically. We start with an intention. We set a goal. We create some kind of program to help us move toward the goal, and we regularly measure our progress toward that goal. And the key to it all is your attitude. You can't change your weight overnight, but you can change your attitude about eating and exercise, and over time, if you stick with that, it will affect your weight. To change ourselves, to change our minds, to change our lives, we have to change our attitudes. And similarly, if we change our attitudes, we will eventually see change in our lives. As we used to say back in the 60s, free your mind, your ass will follow. Positive attitude will help us to see clearly, to keep moving forward, to accomplish our goals. There are a certain number of circumstances in your life, in anyone's life probably, that are more or less unchangeable. And there are things we can change, although some may be harder than others to change. Change is hard. Going through change is hard. Usually when we are planning for change and growth, we are anticipating doing more. Working harder, trying harder to reach certain goals. We might as well say, this next year is going to be harder than last year. If we want to accomplish more and do better, we will have to go at it just a little bit harder and make a little bit more sacrifice and be a little bit more disciplined. We begin that process by taking stock, getting our bearings, and then setting strategic short-term goals. We have to have a clear vision of where it is we are going, what we want to be. We can't get to somewhere that we don't know where it is we're going. And we have to set realistic, achievable goals to help us step by step to get where we're headed. Perspective, vision, planning, and goal setting. We need to apply that simple process to a lot of areas in our lives where we want to grow and improve and flourish. Everything isn't always going to be perfect or work out as planned. We aren't always going to attain our goals. If we always do, we may be setting our sights a little too low. But the correct thing is just to press on toward the goal, to just keep on keeping on, to keep getting up each time we fall down, or indeed when life knocks us down with a hard, unexpected blow. We just have to keep getting back up. People always say, life is not a destination, it's a journey. Part of it is how we make the journey. No matter how well we do this year at reaching these little goals we set, at rightly discerning our correct path in the year ahead, whether we rise or fall, whether we succeed admirably or fail miserably, we'll all be okay as long as we have been true to ourselves, done our best, tried our hardest and done the work required to attain new growth. The new year is full of possibility. However we come out on our goals for this new year, we'll be all right as long as we do what we know in our heart is right.
This is Pam Rader with the Brown County Hour, and I'm here tonight with Carol Morgan, Dick, and Laura Young to talk about the Triad program here in Brown County. Carol Morgan, you're the coordinator, right?
That's correct.
And you want to tell me a little history of the program and who you serve?
We serve mostly the seniors, but anyone 21 or even older we can serve.
And do they have to be disabled or housebound or
yes.
any income qualifications?
No, there's no income. Everything we do is for free.
Mm-hmm. And how do you get referrals?
By word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
We don't advertise or anything like that.
Dick and Laura Young, you're volunteers and have been for quite some time, I hear.
About 8 years.
Give me an idea of some of the things you've done.
I think the basic is simply making home visits. Knock on the door and say, "Good morning, Mildred. Is this a good time to chat?" Sometimes it's a 5-10 minute visit. Sometimes it's 20-30 minutes, depending on how much needs to be said. Just a social visit.
Do you bring food to shut-ins? Do you repair their homes? Or is it more just social, but trying to get a feel for other needs they might have?
The primary purpose is visitation, but obviously we become aware of other needs. And when we do, we try to make sure those needs are met. And we hope to be knowledgeable about other resources in the community, area churches, area agencies that can provide for needs. We do have a small food program that we do provide monthly food for a subset of the people we visit. In addition, we also put up green reflective address signs, the ones often called 911 signs,
mm-hmm.
for any senior or member person in the community that we visit who does not have one and wants one. Some people don't want one. And Dick and I are the ones who do that. We put those up. Most of the volunteers are of a certain age range, and so we do not do a lot of active physical repair work because it's probably beyond most of us. But that doesn't mean people don't need that work done, and we try to work cooperatively with other agencies and churches who have some strong young backs who are wanting to be involved in stuff like that.
I see. And you're located in the sheriff's office, correct?
Yes, in the lower level.
How did that come to be?
Well, we had our own office above the recycle center, and the sheriff came to us and wanted to know if we'd like to move, and we did.
Mm-hmm.
After the new building was built.
Carol, give me some statistics. Approximately how many people do you serve a month or a year, and how many volunteers do you have?
I've got, right now, we've got about 15 volunteers. They're an excellent group of people. We serve probably about 134, 135 people, and it's about a 2-week turnaround. It's really, really a great program.
You visit people every 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Is it more need in the winter because people are more shut in? Or?
No, I think it's just the whole time, you know, the mm-hmm. whole year round. We also have hospital beds, wheelchairs, canes, potty chairs, potty lifts, walkers, stuff like that for free for any of them that needs to use it. We just need them to sign a waiver and to return it to us when they're done with it.
So if somebody wanted to support your program financially, or they themselves want to volunteer, or someone knows a neighbor or themselves that needs help, how would they go about getting a hold of you?
They could call our office at 988-5606, or actually call the Sheriff's Department, 988-6655. Our extension is 2112. Or they can just drop in to the sheriff's office and talk to them. They'd be glad to help them as well. We operate on donations only.
So it's important that people do support mm-hmm. the program.
I would just like to add to what Laura said. Many services that we can't provide ourselves, we try to make sure we know who can. Our name actually was an acronym standing for the right information and direction.
The right information and direction.
Triad, yes.
That's on our cars as well.
It's been a blessing to us to meet so many interesting people throughout the county. A lot of role models.
And like most things, we receive the benefits as much as...
That's correct.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Pause for station identification.
Support. Support for WFHB and the Brown County Hour is brought to you by Plum Creek Antiques, located at the intersection of 135 and 45 in downtown Bean Blossom, where visitors can buy, sell, or trade most anything. More information is available by calling 812-988-6268. You are listening to the Brown County Hour on volunteer-powered community radio WFHB at 100.7 in Brown County, 91.3 and 98.1 in Bloomington, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at wfhb.org.
In the final portion of the show, we'll have an essay from David Seastrom, and we'll listen to an interview with local elder Samuel Fritsch. We'll close the show with a final tune from Chuck Wills and Braden Brown.
In this episode, we're privileged to hear a little bit of Samuel Fritsch's life story. Sam will be celebrating his 90th birthday this month, and he has a lot to say that's worth listening to. As you will hear, he was born on Possum Trot Road in 1926 and lived there until he went off to war in 1944. My tenure on Possum Trot began 37 years later and continues today. I thought a lot about our shared history, or perhaps I should say our shared place in the continuing history of this area. A few of the families he mentioned still live around here, and we know a lot of the same people. The world has changed a great deal since Sam arrived. The world he was born into was essentially the same as it had been for hundreds of years. They didn't have electricity or running water or any machinery, including cars and tractors. They farmed with horses and they went to town in a horse-drawn wagon. They were dairy farmers, and they kept their cans of milk in the well, which was the only form of refrigeration they had. Sam recalled hunting squirrels and rabbits to help feed the family. These critters, along with a few grouse, were the only ones who survived the great clear cut that, along with overhunting, wiped out all of the other game animals. His great-grandparents would have seen bear, deer, elk, and woodland bison. They would have also seen the virgin forest that originally covered almost the entire state. Sam arrived just in time for the Great Depression. He repeated something I've heard from other elders. They lived without money. For most folks, there was no such thing as a job. The people who stayed here had to provide for themselves with their own enterprise. There were people who wove baskets like the Bow Halls in Helmsburg, and there was the Brown County Pottery in Nashville. But most people had to figure out a way to live off the land. Sam and his family were mostly farmers. But his grandpa was also a carpenter, and his great-grandfather was the local doctor. By the time he was born, the forests of Brown County had been clear-cut. When the forest was gone, the local economy collapsed, and a majority of the population left Brown County to seek work elsewhere. The people who stayed had to be tough and resourceful in order to survive. But you know, I'm betting they didn't think of themselves that way. I think they chose to stay because they had history here and they loved the life they lived. The idea of someone telling them what to do would be as foreign as flush toilets or moon rockets. I interviewed an elder who's about Sam's age a few years ago. He talked about working at a tomato factory over by Midway when he was a kid. Midway doesn't exist anymore. Today, the area is known as Fruitdale. I found the term factory to be very interesting. What Keith was actually talking about was a pole barn with long wooden benches and big kettles that were kept boiling with firewood. It sounded like the workforce was mostly women. Keith was hired for this summer job because his mother worked there. The factory contracted the services of several local farmers who grew the tomatoes they canned. When they came ripe, the canning operation began its season. They set up wash tubs where they cleaned the canning jars. A dozen or so people worked long hours in the summer heat, blanching, peeling, putting the tomatoes into jars, and sealing the lids and boiling them to sterilize the contents. The success of this factory was due in part to having access to the railroad and the big city markets it traveled to. This is typical of the type of enterprise that sustained Brown County during the hard times. seasonal, hard work, and low pay. Because the rugged terrain postponed development well into the 20th century, we're a lot closer to our pioneer roots. In essence, our elders lived in the 19th century until World War II came along, and their collective memory extends to a time before civilization made its way to Brown County. Sam and I share something special. In a way, this makes us kin because we both love this place we call home. Those of us who are privileged to live here today stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. When we listen to Sam, we're hearing a voice that's connected to the early days of settlement in this area. If you think about it, we take our place in time and then pass it on to those who come after us. Each of us adds our own voice to the narrative, and because we do, the story goes on. This is Dave Seastrom. See you next time. This evening we have Samuel Fritch with us. And Sam, you were born on Possum Trot Road.
Possum Trot Road.
What year was that?
1926, January. And I had a twin sister that was bigger than I was. I just weighed, about 2 pounds, 3 ounces. And they put me on a pillow behind an old Montgomery Ward, one of those old metal stoves. Heating stoves, and that's how they kept me warm in January.
That was your incubator, huh?
Yeah, it was my incubator.
So you were actually born at home.
I was born at home, and Doc Fritch got there. Well, he was there. My uncle went to get him. He was in Unionville, and he come up and was there.
So your own grandpa delivered
my
you?
My own grandpa, my great-grandpa delivered me.
Your great-grandpa. How old was he when he delivered you?
Oh, he was up, I'd say, he was up, well, probably early 80s. I remember seeing him, though, when he was old and gray, really gray-headed, had a beech nut tobacco up on the back of the couch. And his office was right there back of the house where we live now. We live in a trailer, but there was a store there, and then they had his office was there. There was a barn there on the lot that we own now, and he kept his horse and buggy in there. And it's nice and funny to read some of the books that he had. Old Doc, he's got one in there where it said Cale Stead, and Cale Stead was in Unionville down there at the corner and ran a blacksmith shop.
Okay.
And he had one entry in there that said, doctored cow, or heifer one, I forget which it was, and doctored wife. And for the pay, he had shoes put on the right front foot of one of his horses. So doctors back then, they treated it out. And another thing that I thought was real interesting is he had some down there at Dolan store. He put 25 cents on somebody's bill, and I forget what, it was a Richardson or one of the people that lived there, until he paid off for delivering a baby. Now, back then, he didn't get too much for delivering babies. Yep. And my sister, he paid him, Dad took him a half a load of corn for paying for him, for my sister. See, he was back when horse and buggy was the only way around. It's interesting to go through his book, and I gave it to the Bloomington Library, and I don't know what they did with it. I thought they might put it up someplace and people get to read it and see, because he delivered most of the people who live out around Unionville and all around there.
You were born on Possum Trot. Did you go to school in Helmsburg?
I went to school, and I was in the last year up there at Brock School.
Was that on Slippery Elm Chute?
That's on Slippery Elm Chute,
right.
And Warren Barnes was our teacher. And if you ever seen a teacher that was wild, it was him.
Wild.
I remember seeing him throw chalk at the kids back there in the back end.
Did he ever throw any chalk at you?
No, he never did throw any at me. I was too small, and I was in the first grade, see? And me and Donald Fisher was the only two in the first grade. And I went to school at Brandstutter when I was in grade school, and then I graduated from Helmsburg High School. Now, I don't remember what year, but while I was there, I enlisted in the Air Force so that I wouldn't get drafted, and I lucked out. passed the eye test, and I got on B-24s, and I wound up going to Italy.
What did you do on the
pilot? I was a ball gunner.
Okay. And that ball turret gunner?
Yeah, ball turret gunner. Now, on a B-17, that turret was stationary, but on a B-24, it let down about 17 inches. And that puts you outside of the plane. So when you was in your ball, you was down there on your own almost. In the back was the door that you got in. So after you got in and raised your guns up, you couldn't even get out of it without turning the gun straight down and then crawling back up. So it was funny, and it's small when you get to looking at it now.
Oh, I bet. I bet it was small looking at it then.
Yeah.
So where were you? What theaters?
I went over to Italy. I was in Foggia Air Base there, and right up over the mountain from Naples. But I got over there by the time I got through my service and all the training. The war was about over, and I lucked out and got over there and didn't see hardly any combat by the time I got there.
That's just the way it worked out.
That's the way it worked out, and yeah. I always thought I was lucky because there's a lot of them didn't make it. I was in town. I went to Shepherdfield, Texas, for my basic, and when I was home, one of the Chitwood boys down there was home for his first furlough, and before I got in out of gunnery school, he got killed over in D-Day. Him and Val McCoontz both was in the same school there at Unionville, and they both got killed. And we had a lot of our Hellsburg boys that didn't make it too, so it was a rough old war.
You guys were dairy farmers, is that right?
Yeah, we mostly, of course, we had to keep horses because that's the only way. We never did own a tractor. We didn't have anything. The only thing we had was that well that was a hand-dug well. No electricity, no telephone, no mail service, and no nothing, you might say, except, but we did eat a lot of squirrel and a lot of rabbit.
There weren't any deer in those days.
No, there weren't any deer. But we did have grouse there when I was a kid. And like, if anybody knows a grouse, they're the best eaten bird that we have.
Well, tell me about Lake Lemon and how that affected your family.
Well, when Lake Lemon went in, most of our land, actually the field right below us, was bought up. Dad and them, they moved to Unionville then and built the house where we lived in there.
At your grandpa's place?
Yeah, at my dad's place. My dad and grandpa built it. My grandpa Fritz, Ot Fritz, was a carpenter, and they built it.
So did your family get a fair price for their land?
Well, I guess they did. A lot of people hollered and carried on, like the Chitwoods down there, which was my dad's brothers and all of them. They hollered and carried on, but Bill Chitwood and Jim Chitwood probably caught more bass out of that lake than anybody in the county.
So, in the beginning, it was pretty
in
bad.
In the beginning, it was bad when they had to move, but when they got older, they really enjoyed it.
So your family and you were completely self-reliant.
It was self-reliant.
It was now, the garden, it was your cows, it was the hunting, and that's what kept you.
We had a good life. We didn't know we was poor, so it didn't make any difference.
Well, Sam, it sounds like you've had a rich and interesting life.
And the Lord's blessed me. 4 kids.
And it all started on Possum Trot.
All started on Possum Trot.
Well, bless your heart for coming in, Sam. Really appreciate this. It's been a pleasure to meet you and to hear your stories.
Come down off your throne, leave your body alone. Somebody must change. You are the reason I've been waiting all these years. Somebody holds the key. And I nearly in, and I just ain't got the time. And I'm wasted and I can't find my way home.
So, if we want to get in touch with you, if we want to follow what you're doing, how can we do that?
Well, you can find us on Facebook. You can also get in touch via my website, which is charleswills.com.
And each of you have a Facebook page in your own name, is that correct?
Yes, I have. Mine is Braden Brown Music, or so I also post on just my personal everyday Braden Brown Facebook page.
Yeah, and Facebook for me is just Chuck Wills.
Okay. Well, guys, thank you very much for coming in. Really enjoyed it.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for tuning in to episode 46 of the Brown County Hour, recorded in our studio at the History Center here in downtown Nashville, and brought to you the first Sunday of every month at 9 a.m. and the following Wednesday at 6 p.m. This show was produced by
Jeff Foster,
Pam Rader,
Rick Fettig,
Vera Grubbs,
Carrie Ray,
and Dave Seastrom. We would also like to thank Slats Klug for our theme music. You've been listening to the Brown County Hour,
coming to you from deep in the woods of Brown County, Indiana,
celebrating the arts, culture, and nature that make this such a unique community.
Visit us online at browncountyhour.com.
The Brown County Hour is a production of WFHB.
Volunteer-powered, listener-supported community radio for South Central Indiana.
Take me back to my home, Brown County home.